First Name Sports starts now.
We're kind of on a first name basis around here.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Okay, let's get started.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Greg Frank.
What's going on, America? It's Tuesday afternoon on the Sports Map Radio Network. Congratulations to the Denver Nuggets. They are your 2023 NBA champions. My name is Greg Frank. John Belmer is our producer. We're going to talk with Nate Kreckman in about 30 minutes from Altitude Sports Radio out there in the Mile High City, as they are certainly flying high, I'm sure, in celebration these next few days. I maintain, by the way, the parade is Thursday in Denver. We're getting the Ja Morant suspension news dump on Friday. I think that's going to be the up 3 o'clock. Everybody's like getting out of work. Like, now we'll dump this and wait to talk about it until the following work week. So we'll see about that. But anyway, Denver wins game 5, 94-89. And the Nuggets are your NBA champions. And they played like the best team, and they're champs. So, good for them on that front. Having said that, what a boring NBA Finals that was. I mean, really, if you weren't a fan of either of these teams, you almost had to talk yourself into, well, maybe the door will be a little bit open for Miami. And then maybe, you know, heat culture and toughness and mental fortitude and grit, that'll make this thing close. And I'll admit to being guilty of some of that. I thought it was going to go 7 games. And ultimately, Denver ended up just being better and won it in non-competitive fashion. But looking back, we're not going to remember this finals in 10 years. Like, this is not, and that's even if Jokic ends up being an all-time great and he wins 5 rings. You know, we're not going to remember, we're just not going to remember the Nuggets and the Heat in 2023. Miami never had a chance in 3 of the 4 games it lost. Games 1, 3, and 4 were never competitive, never close. And game 2 was looking like it could have been similar. Like, this thing wasn't that far from being a sweep if Denver could have just closed out game 2, because Denver did have a lead, I believe, as high as 15 at one point in game 2. So, you had a good fourth quarter for Miami in game 2, which got it even after 2. Then, again, at home, which, by the way, Miami ends the playoffs having lost 4 straight home games, losing games 4 and 6 to Boston and games 3 and 4 of the finals, which, you know, had the Heat found a way to get it done last night, wouldn't have surprised me if they lost again at home in game 6. So I don't know what happened there to where the Heat, who, by the way, were very good at home in the first 2 rounds of the playoffs, I believe it was 5-0 against the Bucks and the Knicks in the playoffs. And then obviously you throw in game 3 against the Celtics. They win their first 6 home games in the playoffs, and they end up losing 4 in a row at home to end the playoffs. But regardless, the Heat were not competitive in their 2 games at home. And then in order to be competitive last night, the Heat needed quite a bit of a lifeline from the Denver Nuggets. Denver turned the ball over 15 times last night, which is the most that it turned the ball over of any of the 5 games in the NBA Finals. Now, they had a couple of 14 turnover games, one of which was game 2. The other 14 turnover game that Denver compiled was game 3, which Miami still lost by 15, which goes to show you how bad Miami was in game 3. So, basically, we had the best team in the NBA playing a team that was on a magical run, and we should absolutely still take some positives away from what Miami did, you know, getting to the finals as an 8 seed. But the Heat looked like an 8 seed in this series. They looked vastly outmatched for the majority of this series. And honestly, last night might have been the worst of the five games that Denver played. Because while Denver lost game two, I mentioned the fact that the Nuggets had the lead a good portion of game two. And the Heat had a big fourth quarter and were able to steal it. Last night, Miami was playing with the lead for a lot of that game. And the Heat could never step on the Nuggets' throats last night, in large part because Jimmy Butler was horrible. Okay, Jimmy Butler, playoff Jimmy, where was that guy? And I've been reminding everybody that, hey, we talk about this guy of, wow, what a great run. He's carrying the Heat. And I've been saying, hey, did you know that he only had one 30-point game after the Bucks series? Said that a couple times during the finals, and he didn't have a 30-point game in the finals. So the last three rounds of the playoffs, Jimmy Butler had one game in which he went over 30 points. I think, again, we'll look back on this Heat run, and I think probably for the betterment of the Heat and the how we'll remember this, it will be more about the way they defended, the way they shot the ball, like some of the team things that they did well, not just, hey, Jimmy Butler really put them on their back. Because the more we saw the Heat play in the playoffs, even when they were winning, that wasn't what was happening. And then you see Butler play as poorly as he played last night. He throws the ball right to Kentavious Caldwell-Pope in the most important possession of the game in the final minute. He finishes 5 for 18 from the field. And okay, he hit a couple of shots in the fourth quarter. A couple of threes went in. Otherwise, that stat line could be far worse. By the way, he also gets 3 points gifted to him at the free throw line because I have no idea how that was a foul called on Aaron Gordon in the final 1 to 2 minutes or whenever it happened. So, Jimmy Butler was horrible last night. And Jimmy Butler was bad for most of this series. And so when we already knew there was a talent deficiency for Miami and Miami's best player, who some people thought had the potential to be the best player in this entire series, goes MIA like that, no pun intended. Of course the Heat are going to get rolled. So the best player for the Heat doesn't play like the best player. And then even in a competitive game last night in which Denver did lend them a lifeline, right? It was there for the taking last night because oftentimes we've come on after games and said, well, Denver's just better. You know, what can you do? And that's not the case last night. Neither team played particularly well last night. And we thought because of the fact that the intangibles seemed to be one of the things Miami had clicking in its favor, that Miami would find a way if Denver aided them a lifeline. Tyler Herro ended up not playing, so that aspect of last night's storyline never manifested itself onto the court last night. But you thought if the game's close, Miami seems to navigate the waters of a close game well. Not that Denver can't win those games, but you thought coming down the stretch, and that's what I was saying yesterday, I thought that the game was still going to be competitive, and I was giving Miami a puncher's chance, and it was right there, and they didn't take it. So shame on the Heat for that. And the Nuggets, again, they're the best team in the NBA this year. They deserved it. They won. You know, I think some would argue Boston had the most talent. We didn't get to see that NBA Finals. It is what it is. But gosh, they're boring. I mean, here's Nikola Jokic after the game. He just won his first NBA championship. And here's how he's talking about the parade.
You said after the Lakers win, you said you were surprised that you didn't feel more. So I'm curious what you are feeling right now and if you're looking forward to a parade coming up in Denver.
Men's parade? Men's parade?
Thursday.
No. I need to go home. Okay.
He just says no.
Yeah, no.
No.
Make that a drop. Like, how are we supposed to connect with this guy? I don't care that he's the best player in the NBA right now. Sometimes you can be the best player and you can be boring. And it doesn't get much more boring than winning a championship and did he even crack a smile? I mean,
he did throw Jamal Murray in the pool. I saw that. Yeah.
So
it was a little bit of celebration.
A little something. And I don't know, maybe after a couple days of R&R, he'll be jacked up for the parade and get drunk and have a good time on Thursday. But I don't know. That just doesn't sound like somebody that we should get excited about winning, because he can be the best player and also be somebody that we just shrug our shoulders and say, yeah, but, you know, I don't really relate with that guy. I don't connect with that guy at all. You remember Alex Ovechkin after he finally won the Stanley Cup, going on a bender all summer at the Capitals? You know, there's different guys like that. And, you know, I understand Jokic is from Serbia. You know, he's a little bit maybe more reserved. Maybe there's, like, cultural things that, you know, he'll never quite relate with on the American side. But, like, it just is what it is. Like, he just, you watch him last night, like, the job is done. It is time to, we are done. You know, like, okay. You just won your first NBA championship. Like, that's why you play. Enjoy it. Whatever. Whole big whatever. That's how we're going to look back on these NBA finals. It was boring. It's over. On to the offseason. Speaking of that, where do these teams go from here? The Nuggets are your gambling favorite for the NBA championship in 2024. We'll discuss the futures of Miami and Denver. That's next. First Name Sports, Sports Map Radio.
Over to Stuart Lowry, three. That one misses. Rebound down to KCP. 8 seconds left to go. Casey's across the timeline, and he'll dribble it out. The 47-year wait is over. The Denver Nuggets stand on top of the NBA world. They are champions. And Nuggets fans from sea to shining sea can rest or die in peace.
You're listening to First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network. Live from the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Greg Frank.
All right, there's the final call on Nuggets Radio last night. And listen, while I think that not every championship in sports is going to be the most entertaining, there's always going to be a winning market, a winning city. And, you know, I do think that, you know, rightfully so, people should be going crazy in Denver all week. And, you know, we're going to have a Denver radio host on in the next segment. So while I think nationally we all just, I believe I speak for the large majority of sports fans that felt like they were disappointed by that NBA Finals, good for Denver. And they get their first NBA championship. And there's no asterisk that says that nobody cared about it. So with all that said, where do these teams go from here? Denver is installed as a gambling favorite at most sports books for the 2024 NBA championship. And, I mean, hey, why would you change? Why would you, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, right? Why would you change something that is working as well as the Nuggets were this year? I mean, this was not a, you know, LeBron James carried, you know, they didn't have that kind of a, I mean, Jokic was the best player in the NBA, but I don't think he carried them to a championship the way you might argue LeBron has done at times in his career. I don't think that there's any reason to think that there are certain players that are over the hill. Like, a lot of these guys are in their prime, right? Like Jokic, Murray, Michael Porter Jr., like, all should be there for a while. So I think it's pretty simple for Denver. Retain this core, because this core really wasn't threatened at all in the entire NBA playoffs. Now, I've heard people bring up the path that the Nuggets had playing three teams in the four rounds that were in the play-in tournament. with Minnesota in the first round and then the Lakers in the conference finals and then the Heat in the NBA finals. That's out of their control, and they did what they were supposed to do to their teams. So I don't think that's a reason to knock the Denver Nuggets for not delivering in the guts of the, you know, or for, you know, facing suboptimal competition. Like, they don't control that. And they probably would have beaten Boston. They probably would have beaten Milwaukee. Like, they were playing like the best team. So why would they change much? I think what needs to happen and what will be interesting is how does the rest of the West shake out? Obviously, there's been a lot of buzz surrounding the Dallas Mavericks and retaining Kyrie Irving. I don't know how that LeBron thing even works. If they, you know, if there's serious legs to that, I'm not sure how he gets from L.A. to Dallas. Draymond, maybe. But, you know, the Mavs are a team we're hearing a lot of stuff about, but they didn't even make the playoffs last year. So, you know, it's the Grizzlies were the two seed in the West. We obviously know that they're going to be without John Morant for quite a bit of time. The Kings were the three seed. Maybe they can get better, you know. The Warriors have some work to do in the offseason for the first time in a while, it seems like. Phoenix, perhaps their Suns find a way to get some more depth and Frank Vogel makes them a better defensive team and Phoenix gets out of the West next year. But, you know, the Clippers and the Lakers are always going to be in the conversation because LeBron, AD, Kawhi, Paul George are there. But, you know, how healthy are those four guys going to be next year, particularly the Clippers guys? So, you don't, there's nobody in the West where you just say that's the team that knocks the Nuggets off its pedestal. I mean, Belmar, what would you, if you had to guess, you would probably say the Suns? I mean,
to knock Denver off?
Yeah. Like, if I told you that Denver didn't win the West next year, you'd probably take Phoenix?
Maybe. Maybe even the Lakers?
See, but like, I can listen to you say that, and you're like,
kind of question it. Yeah, I would still say Denver's probably the favorite. But Phoenix, maybe the Lakers, maybe the Mavs, if they can figure some stuff out. There's a couple teams that can give them some hell, but probably
it's
not.
It's all, the onus is all on those teams to get better as opposed to the Nuggets who don't have to change anything. Now, Miami is where we can have more of a conversation about how their roster looks in 2023-2024. Because I think that the Damian Lillard stuff that has obviously been out there ever since Lillard said that Brooklyn and Miami would be the two spots he would, you know, could see himself getting traded to because he's boys with Mikal Bridges, boys with Bam Adebayo. Well, you just look at Miami's backcourt, and they don't have – a lot of their guys are like standstill shooters, right? Max Strus, Gabe Vincent, Kyle Lowry. I mean, Lowry earlier in his career wasn't, but at this stage in his career – you know, he's more of a standstill shooter than he has been before. He's 37 now. So adding a dominant shot-creating backcourt player like a Damian Lillard seems to make so much sense. And you, you know, reassign some of the offensive production a little bit. You don't have to play through Jimmy Butler as much. Because that's the other thing that I think, whether Jimmy likes it or not, they had to go through him a lot offensively because of the fact that a lot of their backcourt players were not shot creators and were more catch-and-shoot type players. Obviously, Tyler Hero, we've seen him thrive in a six-man role. He's somebody that if you put in your starting lineup, you don't feel bad about it, but you know, you feel great if he is your six-man. So I definitely think there is room for a marquee addition in the backcourt for the Heat, whether it's Damian Lillard or, you know, I think I saw some stuff about Kyrie and Miami the last 24 hours or so. So certainly I think the fit is there for Miami to bring in another backcourt player. I do think that from a frontcourt standpoint, you know, you look at Bam Adebayo and how they can kind of play through him. And Caleb Martin being kind of a small ball four, I think that both of those guys I'd have no problem with as a, you know, front court tandem. Now, I'm sure they might look to fortify their depth a little bit there. They had to bring in Kevin Love. So maybe there's, you know, a big that they can bring in to gobble up some minutes. But I think for Miami, a shot-creating guard is a no-brainer. And if they do that, then you look at the East and say, well, Miami just got out of the East as an 8 seed. Now, you also think about the top teams in the East from a seeding perspective this year. There's all this, it might be smoke, maybe there's something to the Jaylen Brown trade rumors that we hear. So if Boston happens to move Jaylen Brown, if James Harden leaves Philly, you know, then you're talking about the Sixers and the Celtics maybe getting a little worse. And I think that the East is much more open in terms of whether it is Miami adding Lillard. Obviously, everybody's going to talk about the Knicks getting a star. And I think the Brooklyn Nets as well, right? I mean, they just traded Durant. They do have ammo. If they wanted to go out, they were the sixth seed, even though they were probably the worst team of all the playoff teams. They were a playoff team, and if you put a star back on their roster, maybe like the point is, I think a lot of these teams will look at the East and say, we're one star away from getting to the finals if we get the right star. Because Boston could trade Jaylen Brown, Philly could move, or, you know, Harden could leave Philly, and even so, like, the Sixers have had so many playoff blunders, I don't think anybody's operating in fear of the Sixers. Milwaukee, if they're the best team, like, okay, the Bucks did just lose to that 8 seed Miami, and the Bucks have their one 2021 championship, but other than that, you know, there have been a few playoff disappointments with Giannis. So they were up 2-0 in the 2019 Eastern Conference Finals and lost four straight to Toronto. So I think that there's a lot, and it's funny I mentioned Toronto, because I think that there could be a lot of teams that feel that they are a star away the way Toronto was 5 years ago when the Raptors went out and got Kawhi Leonard. So whether that's Miami getting Damian Lillard or Brooklyn getting Damian Lillard or, you know, the Knicks, you know, one of these teams that was seeded a little bit lower might think, we get one star, the East is pretty open. Maybe Jaylen Brown departs Boston. Maybe James Harden departs Philly, and we can be right there. So as far as that one team, I think if Miami makes that one big move, you could be talking about the Heat as perhaps the favorites in the Eastern Conference, depending how the rest of the offseason shakes out. Nate Kreckman from Altitude Sports Radio in Denver on the other side to recap the Nuggets championship. That's next. First Thing Sports.
This is First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio studios, here's Greg Frank.
All right, we're back here on a Tuesday afternoon, First Name Sports, Sports Map Radio. Nate Kreckman is our guest as we go out to the Progressive Guest Line. Nate, how you doing? Everybody partying in Denver still, I imagine?
I think people may have finally either gone to bed or gone to work, but it was mostly a good night.
Okay, all right. Well, I hope that I heard there was a shooting not that far from Ball Arena.
Yeah, you know, it's somebody, you know, everyone wants to have a good time and then somebody has to suck, but that's typically how these things go, unfortunately, anymore. But again, a horrible thing and it sucks and it's terrible and we hope everyone's okay, but the Nuggets won a championship and that's still very cool.
Yeah, and that's what we brought you on to talk about. So I mean, how did they do it? How did they just look so dominant, really, in the entirety of the playoffs? And I know people will talk about their easy path, but I don't look at that much. I looked at how they played, and they were the best team.
What was their easy path? I'm still missing out on that argument. What was easy about their path?
Oh, well, I've seen people bring up how they played three teams from the play-in tournament of the four rounds.
They beat Minnesota. They're the number one overall seed. They won 53 games in the regular season, so they earn an opportunity to play a play-in team. That's what having a great regular season does. Then they defeat the four seed who was favored to win the Western Conference by every single betting market and has future Hall of Famer Kevin Durant. And then, you know, they knock off the second greatest basketball player to have ever lived, where many national pundits picked them to win that series. And then they beat the Miami Heat, who were not in their conference, who knocked off a previous NBA champion in the Milwaukee Bucks, who knocked off the Boston Celtics, who were heavily favored to win that series. And then Denver dispatched that team in five games, and they were 16-4 in the playoffs. The easy path argument doesn't hold water with me.
So I guess the first part of my question, how did they do it? I mean, how did they look this dominant?
They're really good. It is the simplest answer that I can give you. Like, Nikola Jokic is the best player on the planet. He and Jamal Murray have a beautiful hive mind that has given us one of the best two-man games the NBA has ever seen. The roster was beautifully constructed with great players surrounding those two superstars and role players that filled in perfectly. This wasn't done overnight. This was something that had to grow and had to be put together. But, you know, Denver, they play a team like Phoenix, which, you know, Matt Ishbia gets the job, and before the ink is dry on the sale, it's like, go get me Kevin Durant. That's how I'm going to win it. Well, Denver was a machine, man. They've been put together. They were ready for that kind of thing. You know, the Lakers reassembling at the trade deadline, as they seemingly do on an annual basis. Denver was, they had continuity. They had chemistry. They had all of those things. And these teams that, yes, had very good players, but you can't slap it together and think that you're going to hang with a team like Denver that is the best offensive team in the NBA. And, oh, by the way, a pretty damn good defensive team when they want to and when they show up in the playoffs. So that's how this thing was, you know, this is how this was done. They have great players. There was excellent roster construction, and this thing has been building over time with good coaching, good culture, all those buzzwords that you talk about. Like, it was really on display with this Nuggets team.
You know, I think that the Nuggets are another good example of betting on your own guys. And I think that too often we hear at the end of NBA seasons, people Monday morning quarterbacking it. For example, I think it's ridiculous that Boston would consider breaking up Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. And you hear different things like that about teams that have superstar talents that fall short. And the Nuggets obviously had to deal with Jamal Murray's ACL injury. But, you know, you go back to 2019, they lost a Game 7 at home against the Portland Trail Blazers. And they clearly felt that there was a level that this group could still get to, supplemented with different role players that they brought in as well. And now they're the NBA champions. Shouldn't that be what most teams aspire to do in terms of draft your good players, surround them with the right guys, and even if the success doesn't happen overnight, double down, triple down on the fact that you have the right guys in place, right?
You're dead on, man. That's what it should be. That's what it can look like in sports. Now again, like, it helps to get an MVP with the 41st overall pick in the draft, a two-time MVP and an eventual finals MVP. Like, let's not pretend for one second that there wasn't good fortune here going on. But also, and this is one of the things that, you know, we really confronted here in Denver sort of watching this playoff run was, you know, the national media descends upon Denver, you know, around, you know, second round against Phoenix, conference finals, NBA finals, and everybody sort of throws in their two cents on this team. And it's like, you know what? A lot of you guys are really good at covering the off-season rumor mill and covering, you know, who's going to assemble together and, you know, what team is Kyrie getting traded to this year and who is LeBron wooing and all those things that that transactional NBA news, it's interesting stuff. Like, I read it all. I follow it all. I gobble it all up.
Yeah.
But also, like, one thing you got to remember is while we do all of that, you know who else does it? NBA owners do those things. And they think, like, oh, if we just go and, you know, trade these four first-round picks for Rudy Gobert, that's the thing that's going to put us right over the top. Yeah. Ironically, I'm bagging Tim Connelly, who built Denver. But still, like, they think those things. And to actually have a commitment and say, Michael Malone is imperfect, but we're going to stick with him. Nikola Jokic is an imperfect superstar, who is not perfect, by the way, but he was at the time. We're going to stick with him. Jamal Murray is an imperfect point guard, but we're going to stick with him. We're going to draft Michael Porter Jr. at number 14. We're going to take a, you know, a player that is maybe fallen short of expectations in Aaron Gordon out of Orlando, and he's going to be the puzzle piece that we need exactly. Like, to have the commitment to just sticking with it, it's not an easy thing to do in sports. And I think the Nuggets organization deserves a lot of credit for being able to identify it, taking the right calculated risks when they needed to, and then just staying the course. It's so rarely done in sports. And, you know, Greg, you do sports talk, so do I. Like, we spend so much time, again, talking about player movement and potential deals and free agency markets. Right. And all
we like to play
things.
GM.
And we love it. Absolutely. Okay, I got fantasy teams in every sport. Yeah. I love to do it, too. You know, like, don't get me wrong, but also the Nuggets just put on display for us right there, like, oh, yeah, there is something to be said for actually sticking with a plan.
Yeah. And Nate, let's end on this then, because you look at Denver now and you say, well, all these guys are in their prime for the most part. And so often you look at some recent NBA champions, okay, LeBron nearing free agency at different times of his championship tenure, or Durant was towards the end of his run with the Warriors, we kind of had a sense he could move on. And then last year's Warriors, they were all getting a little bit older. We're not really saying any of the Nuggets are aging or there's a big free agent here. So what do the next 5 years look for this team?
It's a great question. Underrated aspect of what Denver put together as well. Everybody was locked up and paid on this team. So to your point, like, nobody was, well, I need a bigger role. I need more shots. I need more looks. I need more minutes, whatever it may be, in order for them to then maximize their potential value on the market. This is a bunch of guys outside of Bruce Brown, who's got a player option, and he made some really interesting comments after the game last night. Could have been the champagne talking, who knows? But he talked about potentially wanting to stick around Denver, which is pretty wild. But everyone's locked up. Everybody's staying right here. No one's going anywhere. And Christian Brown is only going to continue to develop. Yeah. Maybe he's got a starter's future. Peyton Watson was a guy that they got at number 30 overall, who really flashed at the end of the regular season. Calvin Booth has already made a deal to try and get himself in place to trade up in this year's draft and get another piece. So, you know, they're acting aggressively, but the core is locked up, signed, and not going anywhere. And there's no reason to believe that Denver Nuggets shouldn't be the favorite to win it again next year.
Yeah. Well, I guess let's end with this. Was sitting courtside last night the closest Russell Wilson will get to a championship in Denver?
You know the answer to that question before you even asked it. Get out of here.
Well, hey, listen, we had to do something to rain on your parade just a little bit over there. But have fun. Enjoy it. Nate Kreckman from Altitude Sports Radio. Appreciate your time. We'll do it again.
Of course. That was great.
All right. Yeah. I mean, hey, by the way, how about that? Christian Brown, a college champion last year at Kansas, and in his rookie season wins the NBA championship with the Nuggets. So pretty cool stuff for him. I saw Bill Self tweeted last night that he was in the building. So, yeah. I mean, hey, listen, their winter teams in Denver are really good. They won the Cup last year, and they won the NBA championship. The baseball team's a dysfunctional mess out there, and the football team, I didn't know the answer to that question. But anytime we can make fun of Russell Wilson, we do it. We'll take a timeout, and we'll come back. Could the Stanley Cup be hoisted tonight in Sin City? Game 5, Vegas Golden Knights, Florida Panthers, Stanley Cup final. We'll break it all down next. First Name Sports, Sportsman Radio.
Back with First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Live from the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Greg Frank.
All right, it is Game 5 of the Stanley Cup Final tonight in Vegas as the Golden Knights will look to become the fastest expansion franchise to win a Stanley Cup in their sixth season of existence. That record currently still held by the 1974 Philadelphia Flyers, who were part of the 1967 it's deemed the second six as the league went from their original six, doubled from 6 to 12, and the Flyers were part of that 67 expansion and won the Cup in 74. And now the Golden Knights are looking to win the Cup in a faster time frame from their inception to the league. And is there any reason to think that Vegas will not do it tonight? And I think the only thing that I can come up with is maybe Vegas is just due for a clunker. Maybe for one reason or another, Vegas doesn't play that well. Because other than that, in a lot of the same ways we talked about the Denver Nuggets on the hardwood, you can talk about the Vegas Golden Knights on the ice. And that is, they look like the best. They know they play with a confidence that they know they're the best. And there's depth to where you say it could be one guy one night, it could be that guy the next night, it could be the C guy a third night, whatever. As evidenced by Aiden Hill's performance in these playoffs coming in for Laurent Brossoit, they have really played like a team that's poised to win the Stanley Cup, both mentally and physically. And so the only thing I can think of for why Vegas wouldn't win tonight is if there's like a C effort tonight from Vegas. If there's just a weird head scratch or we're just like, what was that? Because we've seen enough now in these playoffs, particularly in the Stanley Cup final, to where Vegas, in its wins, we leave thinking, oh yeah, the better team won. And in the one win Florida has, we leave thinking, gosh, they really eked that one out, and they're still alive at the time. They were down 2-1, and, you know, anytime it's 2-1, you can talk yourself into a series as a result of that. But I talked about it after Game 3. Game 3 did not feel like a substantial change in the Stanley Cup final, despite the fact that it was the first win of, and maybe the only win for Florida in the series. It felt like a survival. It felt like a sigh of relief, perhaps, collectively from the Panthers for just the rest of the, you know, for the day off, they could say, okay, well, we're still in it, kind of, sort of. Whereas I keep going back to the way Florida started Game 4 and the way they ended Game 1 as the differences in this series. Tied at 2 after 2 periods in Game 1, and you allow Vegas to score 3 times in the third period and really run away with it 5-2. Vegas wins that first game. And then you come out in what was also kind of a must-win game for all intents and purposes, and you get down 3-0 on home ice on Saturday night in Game 4. And they battle back, albeit with a kind of a fluky bounce goal off of a couple of skates that, you know, Brandon Montour gets credit for and Aiden Hill's kind of chuckling at after it beats them. And, you know, Alexander Barkov scores a goal and, hey, it's 3-2. But I talked a little bit about this earlier in the week, yesterday. I say earlier in the week. It's still just Tuesday, so I guess we are still early in the week. But Aiden Hill and Vegas, they sat on that thing pretty well on Saturday night. And a fluky bounce like Montour's goal didn't necessarily throw them too far off script, even after Barkov scored early in the third period. We kept playing, and eventually, you know, Florida got a few chances at the end of regulation, but the Knights win, and now they're up 3-1 going home in a series in which they have really been the better team. Like, this has not been 4 close games, and 3 of them have gone the way of the Knights. The one real close game in this series was won by Florida, and that was Game 3. I know that Game 4 was 3-2, but Vegas felt in control of that thing the whole way. So what's the path tonight for Florida? First off, get the first goal. Play with a lead. Take the crowd out of the game. You thought Denver was enjoying things last night. Vegas, America's playground, right? Everybody likes to party in Vegas. And the Knights, everybody loves them there because they were the first team there. And I don't think, by the way, I think that Vegas is an excellent example. And maybe we'll see if this can work with I think we are seeing it with Seattle, and I've talked about how when you have teams succeed early in their arrivals to a new market, it really, you know, kind of strikes a chord with that market and that fan base. And so I think that the Knights are always going to be a big deal in Vegas now. And so to win the Cup tonight, I mean, if you're Florida, you need to silence that crowd. Get a goal, and please, on behalf of Paul Maurice and on behalf of hockey fans that just won a close game tonight, stay out of the penalty box, because Mark Stone, Jack Eichel, Jonathan Marchessault, like they can Vegas and Pietrangelo at the blue line is the power play quarterback. Like they start moving the puck around and they make you pay, and that sucks the life out of you. When you're playing Vegas, when you already know that 5-on-5 against a lot of teams, Vegas is better to begin with. And so then you take a penalty, you skate short, you're 5-on-4, their first unit starts moving the puck, and we've seen how lethal they've been at times on the power play, particularly in this series. So do not take penalties, because that's another easy way to get the crowd back in. You say you score the first goal, and if you're Florida, 5 minutes later you take a penalty, the crowd's all excited again because Vegas has a power play and a chance to tie the game back up right away. That's the kind of stuff you can't do. It's like in baseball. When you score, you have a decent inning. You want your pitcher to go out and have a shutdown inning. Florida needs to string together shifts and ultimately turn that into a period, turn one period into two periods, and then make a full game out of it where we say, you guys really earned that one tonight. Because even in Game 3, Florida had to get a late goal in regulation from Matthew Tkachuk to send it to overtime, and credit Carter Verhaeghe with a big goal to win that game for Florida. But it was, as I said earlier, a survival to the fullest extent last Thursday in Game 3. And so now, if you're Florida, you need to play your best game. And how do you play your best game? You do things that you haven't been able to do most of the series, and that's stay out of the penalty box, play with a lead, get in front, score the first goal, score the second goal, allow your goaltender to just say, now I get to sit on the lead. I'm the guy that's the Conn Smythe Trophy winner if we win this series. We've talked about Sergei Bobrovsky needing to be the best player on the ice for Florida in the entire series if Florida's going to win. And Bob played pretty well in Game 3. He needs to be on his game as well, but they need to help him out more. So that's how I think Florida can win the game tonight. Having said that, what blemishes have we seen from the Vegas Golden Knights that make you think that they are going to even lend a lifeline to Florida tonight? You know? Like, you look at some of their previous closeout games, and Vegas ended up running away with it kind of against Edmonton in Game 6 of that closeout series. They were down 2-1 after one period against Edmonton in that sixth game, scored the last four goals of the game and won 5-2. Clobbered the Dallas Stars in Game 6, 6-0 in Dallas. So if you're Florida, this could get ugly fast if you start poorly again. So you need to ease your way into things if you're the Panthers. And hope that you're there in the third period. So you get a power play goal, something. But first and foremost, stay out of the penalty box and get a few chances yourself on the power play to just make your life easier, because the Panthers have not done themselves any favors in this series. That's the plan. That's the path for for Florida. But I don't know. It's a hard one for me to really sell. I mean, we do a segment on the show to talk about the game tonight. If Vegas won the game like 4-0 and it was pretty boring, and I know Matthew Tkachuk's been battling an injury, if he's far from 100%, it just seems like Florida's outmatched here. We'll see, though. I'd love to be wrong and have a Game 6 on Friday. We'll take a timeout, and we'll come back. A bit of a bizarre story in the National Football League developing. That's next. First in sports. Sports Map Radio.